greetings, and welcome to The Thirsty Mage, the podcast that always appreciates when developers try to make our lives just a little bit easier. I'm your host, and a fan of on-the-fly difficulty changes when I'm really in a rush, David Lloyd. And this week on The Thirsty Mage, we're going to be sharing some of our favorite quality of life improvements that evolved in RPGs over the years. And we're going to discuss the ones that we think should apply universally to RPGs going forward. Joining me while wishing for a compass and a proper map while playing a classic Shin Megami Tensei title is Casey Gibson.
Oh, man. I spent so much time just looking around and, like, going around in circles. And the worst part, I'm like, well, at least I'm going to be nice and strong for that next boss. and then I just get absolutely dumped on. So it was, like, not even really... It was something. But you know what? That's the trials and tribulations of playing a Shin Megami Tensei game.
Yeah, Casey and I are going through Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne on the Nintendo Switch together, and I'm really glad that I got a partner playing this game, because there's been many times where I've texted you and be like, yeah, where am I supposed to be going here? Have you figured it out? And it was funny when you mentioned, like, even right off the bat, I think we're like an hour in and walking on the Tokyo map, and like it's like a spherical, like the city has changed into this like spherical orb. And so I'm walking on the map, and I'm looking for one of the parks. I can't remember what it was called, but I just could not figure out where to go. And then you're like, well, it's in the southwest. I'm like, I can't even get to the southwest. And then I just noticed this, like, one little small patch of ground that I can walk around. And I'm like, oh, what? There's more places?
I know. It's so silly.
I really wish I had a map, because then maybe I would have realized that, like, the whole area is about 10 times larger than I thought it was.
Yeah, I remember playing 4 and then, yeah, getting really turned up a lot and, like, reading online, people like, I actually referenced, like, a real-life map of Tokyo and it actually helped me get to the station, you know? Which is sort of, which I think is really cool. Like, I think that the game is, you know, reflects real life enough that you could use a real map. But at the same token, it's like, throw us a bone here, you know, like I shouldn't have to go look up a real world map to figure out where to go.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, it's been a fun go so far, and looking forward to playing that. But it especially hurts with all the random encounters when you're lost on the main map too, because it just feels like every 3 steps you take, you're getting in a fight while all at the same time trying to figure out just where am I supposed to go?
I swear, I didn't notice it so bad at first, and then you mentioned it, and then I swear, the next time I played, like, got into a battle, and I took literally one step and got into another battle, and I was like, oh, no.
Yeah. There's one area, the underpass in Ginza, is, like, one of the few areas where there actually are no monsters to... And I almost just wanted to set up shop there and be like, I'm not leaving this place again.
I'm home.
This is heaven. I can walk around and I don't have to get into fights. This is the first place that I've been to that I could do that. It's lovely.
Yep. Yep. And they don't even throw you any bones in terms of, like, an easy way to fill up your party's, like, HP and MP, you know? So, like, I end up using items and, like, because, I mean, this is turning into a Shin Megami Tensei episode, but yeah, I'll digress, actually. I won't go any further. I'm sure we're going to have a episode fully blown out for just that, so I'll save my thoughts there.
Yeah. Well, it is on topic, though, because these are all quality of life improvements that that weren't available back when Shin Megami Tensei 3 came out back on the PS2. So this is, I think it's almost a little bit of an inspiration on why we decided to go with one of these episodes, because it just seems like we jump between retro and new games all the time, that I think it's that much more clear when we're doing that it's like, oh man, these, the leaps and bounds that the new hardware has allowed these quality of life improvements has just made life so much easier. It's like, sometimes it's harder to go back to those retro titles, but now that we've played so many, we've got a few things to talk about tonight. But I guess before we get into that, we'll have to talk about the drink of the week. And this week for me, I needed some hard liquor. it's been a tough week. I don't want to get into it because the wounds are still fresh.
Yeah, but I won't turn the knife. Yeah. Too bad.
Yeah. But all I'll say is I needed to. A good helping of some whiskey, and I went with an old favorite in Canadian Club.
Mm. Well, I was going to say, I won't make fun of the situation at hand, because the guy I don't like wasn't even playing for most of it, so luckily he's okay, though.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's one of those cheering for a sports team feels like an abusive relationship, because it's like I give and give and give for months on an end, and then when it's time to get something back, I just get crapped on. So it's like, I don't even know if I want to be in this relationship anymore. So.
Yeah, and you know what? It's actually insane, because like you would think, right, would you rather be like a Jet fan, a New York Jet fan, or a Maple Leafs fan, right? Like, which one hurts more? And it's got to be you, because like you guys are so good each and every year, and then just, you know, one thing leads to the other, where the Jets have just been historically bad for the last decade, so I'm almost just more numb to it. But I tell you what, I sure do miss watching meaningful, like, football games. Like, we haven't had many over the last decade. But yeah, I think I'd rather the pain, to be honest with you. But yeah, I know Maple Leafs are, like, different. They're, like, next level, though, in the pain they cause.
Well, with the NFL season coming up, do you think you're going to need some of this whiskey this season? Or?
I think this is going to be a great season for the Jets. And it might not be great in terms of, like, a wonderful record. But I think it'll be, like, a season you can turn to and be like, that's when it started to turn around. And, you know, I don't know if we're going to turn into, like, an amazing team over the next, you know, 5 years or whatever. But I think we have, like, competent people in leadership position for once. So at least I feel like there's a fighting chance.
Yeah.
But now your whiskey, do you just drink this in like a glass over rock, like over ice, you know, or are you like taking shots of whiskey?
Just sipping it in a glass. I just go straight up. I don't worry too much about the ice. Sometimes I'll put in a splash of Coke just to give it a little bit of flavor, but most of the time I'm just kind of sipping it straight up.
Yeah, I feel like at like a certain point, just adding a little bit of something else just makes it taste like a bad version of that. Like, I remember, it had to be, like, one of the first times I ever tried drinking. I had to be in, like, I don't know, 10th grade, maybe. And I remember, like my parents don't drink liquor at all. So I remember I was like, oh, my God, I found a bottle of liquor. Like, I didn't even know we had that. So, like, my buddy came over and we, like, poured these big old glasses of iced tea. And we just put, like, a little bit of vodka in each one. And we're just like, oh, this is horrible. It just tastes like terrible iced tea. And then we just, like, ended up pouring it down the drain, and that was that.
Well, just as whiskey can improve my quality of life, there's a lot of quality of life improvements that can help with RPGs, and we're going to go through some of those different things that we've seen spread out over the years. Like we were saying, I think a lot of it stems from the fact that now that the hardware is getting more advanced and things, better processors, better hard drives, so that it gives us the opportunity for new RPGs to institute, like all these different ways just to make our lives a little easier to, you know, so that the developers are, they understand we don't have a whole lot of time to play video games maybe like we did back in the day. So it's to help value our time, I guess, is the best way to put it. They understand that there's lots of games to play and little time to play them. So whatever they can do to make our lives a little bit easier, I think that's terrific.
Yeah, I think, you know, it might also factor in too, right? If you're re-releasing SMT3, you don't want it necessarily to be a slog where someone picks it up and they go, I don't really like that game. I'm not going to pick up the brand new one coming out, probably not this year. And then, you know what I mean, where it does, they throw in those things and, you know, SMT might not be the best example for that. Think more Trails of Cold Steel, where you've got the speed up. It's not quite times three. Is it just times two?
I think it's times two, yeah.
Yeah, so, and then that makes that game, right, like, if you're using that function quite a bit, you probably shave off 10 hours easy of what other people are playing, so makes it a little more speedy, right, and then to actually see the end of the game, and then they can sort of get their talons in them and hope that, you know, now we've got a fan for life kind of thing.
Yeah, well, and I even think just in these days, it's just easier to get games, like, I think they're comparatively cheaper than back in the day when we were just had to buy discs. Like, now you can just go on your PlayStation or your computer or your Switch or whatever and just download a game in seconds. So it's like, if one game's making you mad, you just move on to the next one. So there's some incentive there for the developers to make sure that we're enjoying ourselves and that it doesn't feel like this, doesn't feel like work. Like, that's the biggest thing. Video games should be fun. And they, you know, back in the day when you bought a game and that was all you had, then you kind of felt compelled to play through it, to get through it. 'Cause it's like, when's mom and dad going to buy me another one? Because they're not going to be too happy about it. So
yep, yeah. So you're exploring every nook and cranny, right? Yeah, just almost killing time till it was warranted to get another new game.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is we're going to go through a lot of our favorite quality of life improvements. And the ones, basically, these are the ones that I think are just, in this day and age, they're just a must. Like, they have to be included in every RPG going forward. And I think we'll start with one of the most obvious ones to me, which is the autosave.
Mm.
Especially, like I said, with the new technology, and if you're playing on a PS5, in particular, you've probably experienced the game crash or two. Especially, even on the Switch, I think we still get a lot of, you know, crashed menu and that sort of thing. And we were just talking about SMT3, and that actually happened to me, I think, like, in my third hour. Mm. I had about 30 minutes going through, and there was, I remember specifically where it was. So in I think it was Shinjuku, there was the underground bar where you meet the main character's friend.
Yep.
And there was a demon there that you had to learn about where the Nihilu were or something. She gave you a piece of information or something, and you had to fight her, and then once you beat her, she gave you the information so that you could continue the story. Well, what ended up happening to me is, so I had been playing for about a half an hour. Forgot to save because
you're just so ingrained at this point, right? The autosave.
Just forgot. Like, you know, it's an old game. Not used to playing the old retro game again. So get in there, fight her, and then it freezes. And then kicks me to menu.
Ugh.
And 30 minutes down the toilet.
Yeah, and I tell you what, though, with games like this, you do that once, and I bet you it won't happen again. you know, yeah. That's one of those, like, you know, shame, what's it, burn me once, shame on you, burn me twice, shame on me, or whatever. You know, it's like,
yep,
it ain't happening again. And I guess just for my instance there, I just knew, it's like, I know, and I guess I wasn't thinking necessarily so much as a crash, but just as much as, like, you could just get, like, gimped really easily in this game and just die, you know, real quick. So, like, for me, I'm always saving pretty much every time I pass it. But, yeah, it definitely was, like, something I had to cognizant, like, think about going into it, be like, I need to be aware because, yeah, this game is definitely an old-school RPG in that regard. And I guess, you know, as far as new saves, because specifically talking about Shin Megami Tensei 3 here, they did a lot of upgrades for the quality of life in more subtle things. Instead of an autosave or being able to necessarily save everywhere, there's this suspend feature, which essentially it acts as a save, but not necessarily really, you know, because, you know, you could suspend your state, it'll kick you back out to the menu. You can come back, continue right from that spot, but if you die in the next battle, you're still going back to the most previous time that you've actually saved at a terminal. So it's sort of giving you a little bit, you know, not fully making it so accessible to save, but they do throw a little bone there. And then I know even with fusions with the demons, right? Like, you know how you could pick their abilities?
Yep.
You couldn't do that in the original.
Oh,
so okay. You would just get random. So I feel like that probably added a really large, I mean, obviously tons of RNG, but like a bit of difficulty because specifically like that one boss, you know, like imagine like, oh, I fused the demons. Oh, I didn't get the right skills, you know, and some fights requiring specific sets of abilities, you know what I mean? I could see that being super frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Well, even, I know some games even have, like, multiple autosaves. So it's really nice when you get kicked out of a game where you can head on into the loading screen and then kind of choose from a list of, like, here's three autosaves and here's your list of the actual saves that you did. And I feel like Someone could correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure Cyberpunk 2077 had multiple autosaves, which is, like, very, very good for a game that pretty much kicks you out every 45 minutes or so.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So. Necessary.
Yeah, it's basically, like, I don't know if, obviously they were not planning on having a game to kick you out every 45 minutes, but, it worked out well in everyone's favor who ended up playing that game, probably on a next-gen console, that they have those autosaves for. Because I know I took advantage of it many a times getting kicked out of my game.
Mm.
It's basically two or three a night, so.
Yeah, it. I mean, I think nowadays, unless if you have a game like Dark Souls that is, you know, really targeting being a really difficult game, you know, where the idea is to do it, like, perfectly, you know? I think most RPGs are really just, yeah, they're going to let you save or auto-save quite a bit, you know? Like, again, unless if they're really trying to get, like, give the nod towards, like, the more traditional, you know, roots of the RPG. But, you know, I'm a fan of auto-saves. I mean, there's nothing worse than losing any bit of time. I mean, even 20 minutes sucks, you know? But, like you said, like, half hour, hour... Oh, man, 2 hours, you know, like, there's no really worse feeling. And I think, honestly, for me, with, like, even, like, thinking about, like, a Fire Emblem game or just tactics games in general, right? It's like they're prone to that, and not necessarily from, like, a crash or anything, but just like, oh, you failed the mission, or more specifically in Fire Emblem, when you're, like, trying not to lose anyone and you lose someone. Like, I used to, you know, someone died, I'd just restart the mission, and nowadays I'm like, well, it's like I just don't want to waste so much of my time, you know? It's like I don't have enough of it. And that's, like you said, I think developers are seeing that, especially with these super long games.
Mm. Staying on the save slots theme, the other thing that that kind of goes hand in hand with that is I really love the games that give you multiple save slots. I know specifically the Trails of Cold Steel on PlayStation 4, like any of them, like 1 through 4, I don't know if they actually have. I think they do have a maximum limit, but the save slots, like, are in the hundreds. Like, I'm pretty sure I ended up getting to, I think, like, 1 and 2 might have, like, 150 save slot max, but then, like, 3 and 4, I'm pretty sure. Either I just didn't get all the way there or something, but they got a couple hundred slots open there. And I think that's really terrific for RPGs, especially, like, something where I know in Trails of Cold Steel specifically, like, there's different quests that need to be done, like, if you're trying to go for trophies or that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And there's some hidden quests, so if you, like, miss a quest, it's good to have as many save slots as you can so that it's like, okay, you know, I screwed this up, I want to go back. And you're, instead of, like, having a save every couple hours, maybe you have a save, like, every 30 minutes or something, so that, like you said, we're just not losing that progress, even though maybe we have to double back a bit.
Yeah, I always like to do that with the multiple save slots, even though most of the time I'm probably not going to go back, but just if there, yeah, is some sort of big event that maybe, you know, I don't want to do it incorrectly, or, yeah, like, maybe I wanted to do something differently, or just see the multiple outcomes, right? So to be able to reference back and be like, oh, I got to save here, you know what I mean? It's nice, like you said, it's just nice. And then, yeah, especially if you're a trophy hunter, in that regards, yeah, it's like, make a bajillion saves, you know, anything to make it easier to get those trophies, because, like, yeah, last thing you want to do is, like, oh, crap, I missed one little spot, you know, like, now I'm going to have to either not get the trophy, or I'm going to have to replay this game at some point, and that's, you know, maybe that means 30, 40 hours, you know, and then I think most people would be like, well, screw it, you know, but there are crazy people out there who love those trophies, so fortunately I'm not one of them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I don't understand the, like, in this day and age, why, like, what's the limitation? Like, unless, I don't know if there's something to do with the console or something, or it just seems weird to me that we have these super huge hard drives and SSDs, and all of a sudden the developer's like, well, no, here, you only get 10 save slots. Like, the one that stood out for me recently was playing through Fantasian. They only had 12 save spots. And so, like, by the time I got back, like, to the 13 and I had to take over one, like, the anxiety of
oh, no,
going over, it's like, no, what if I need this?
And that's,
like,
what,
why do I only have 12?
And David never, like, played Fantasia again.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I was playing that on an iPad Pro, and it comes with a 256 gigabyte drive. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, why are you restricting me to 12? Like, these saves can't be that big. Like, what's going on? Like, even, I don't know if it's Apple is only restricts them to 12 because I know the iCloud, like, the saves are also stored in the iCloud, but I'm like, even then, is it really, like, we're only talking about a few megabytes each, probably, like,
yeah,
what's going on? It's crazy.
And then there's Pokemon. They just want your money, though. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
Yeah, it's insane. Do you remember what the Sword and Shield, I don't even remember what Sword and Shield's save situation was like.
I'm pretty sure it's just one per, like, I guess.
One per account.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I didn't play that, or I mean, I guess I played a good amount of it, but it's been so long.
It's been a while, yeah. I guess the only trick there is playing under multiple profiles, I guess, is really your only trick for having multiple saves. But then that's not even like multiple saves in your account. Like, that's just the ability to play as someone else. Like, obviously, back in the day on the Game Boy, only one person could play on any given
on
cartridge.
On one cart, yeah.
Yeah. But now, yeah, with the profiles, but yeah, it's, I don't know. It's one of those things where I when I play an RPG and I've already hit the max in the saves, I get mad because I'm like, no, I want all my saves. Especially I know this is something that's very specific to us, but for capturing footage as well, it's nice to have those saves because
different areas.
Then maybe I don't have to capture. Yeah, so yeah, I can just play the game and not have to worry about capturing every little detail, and then I can make notes and then go back and just open the saves and capture where I was at and stuff like that. So that's,
yeah, and that's, I've totally thing. Like for capture footage, like, there's nothing worse than like, oh, I've only got like an hour or two in it. Yeah, it all looks more or less like the same area, you know? And it's like, ugh. Yeah. That's more of a problem for smaller games, not necessarily an RPG, but.
Yeah, I guess I ran into this issue playing Persona 4 Golden as well. And I'm thinking, like, I think there was 40 save slots, which isn't bad. But again, this is a computer. Like, this is on my PC. I think I have the choice of turning on cloud saves for Steam, but I don't think it's necessary or required. And it's like, if I want to max out my hard drive with 200 saves, just let me do it.
It's funny because I definitely don't use nearly as many saves as you do, apparently. I don't think I've ever hit the limit on a game save wise because, you know what it is, no? I save like three or four of them, and then eventually I'm like, all right, it's been like 20 hours, I'm just gonna save over that first slot again, you know. You're like, blasphemy.
Yeah, no. Yes. I don't know. You just never know. I guess I'm just a little fastidious, or I don't know what the particular wording is. Like, I'll have files on my computer from like years ago. I remember I did a podcast once, and I did a recording with them in like, I don't know, I think it was 2017, and then I did another recording in 2019. And I had to send it in, and I had accidentally sent the 2017 in. And the response back was, why do you still have this?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to delete anything.
What in tarnation? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I guess that brings us to the third quality of life improvement, and this is one that we've seen recently as well, is speed enhancements. I guess we just talked about it a minute ago, having the ability to increase your speed in the game, whether it's in battles or outside or just in general, increasing the speed. So how, I know, like you said, for Trails of Cold Steel 1 that you're playing through now, I'm assuming that you've used the 2x speed. Like, how often are you using it in that?
Early and often. For the 2x speed, because a lot of the areas in the first one, right, like when you're out you know, you're on your field studies and it's more of like a, hey, go kill some monsters or whatever. A lot of the areas are pretty linear, right? With a few little offshoots. But there's not a whole ton to do on them. Like, they look fine. You know, of course, there's enemies to battle through. But pretty much when I'm running around, I've got 2x speed on, zipping around there. And then in battles, it's like sort of a mix. Like, I'll keep it off, and then, like, you know, when I'm doing, like, my special attacks, I'll, like, I won't want to necessarily just outright skip them, but I'll do, like, the double speed so you can see the animation go by pretty quick. I'd say I'm relying on it quite a bit, and I love it. It's great. Now, it's funny because then I think to the Final Fantasy remasters, right? And they are at 3x speed. And I think that's almost too much. Now hear me out here. When I played Final Fantasy VII, I liked it because I've played that game before. I know a lot of it. You know what I mean? The turn-based, like, I think 3x speed is better suited for the turn-based. I think also, right, that game has, like, crazy battle animations that take really long. So, like, having 3 speed's great. But when I played Final Fantasy XII, I'd say it was actually a bad thing because I was relying on it too much. And again, I think when I was traveling through big open areas, and again, that game features some really large areas, right? It feels MMO-esque, but it's a single-player game. But for me, like, traveling was great, but I'd rely on it too heavily during battles, and that game is more, you know, like, time matters. So, like, blasting through it, I'd be getting attacked more. I'd be just, and then I just almost default to, like, well, I'll just do my standard attack and, like, all these, like, weak ones I should be able to just blast through, you know? And it just wasn't as fun, I don't think. So I think it's sort of a slippery slope where it can work really well in some spots, and I think to, like, bravely default, right, where you can really, and I guess it really wasn't an improvement per se because it was just in the game, but I think it was quality of life improvement on the genre in general, where you could, you know, go up to 4x speed, I think, right? Or was it, I'm trying to think.
Well, they had there was, like, a gauge that you... I thought there was, like, a slider that you could make it.
Yeah, I'm thinking it, like, could be it 1, 2, 3, multiple or 4x the speed or something crazy like that. I probably butchered it and I'm probably way off. But but anyway, they definitely had it where, you know, you could boost up the speed, which was great for when you were, like, grinding and stuff. So I think they're great. I think the option's great. For Final Fantasy, I would say I almost wish they had, like a times two with the and a times three. Do they?
I got it here for you. Okay, so for Bravely Default, you hit the button once for 2x and another for 4x.
Okay, so I like that idea because it gives you the, like, you know, all right, I'm grinding mindlessly, right? x4. Let's go. I'm playing the story and I'm just traveling throughout this big area. Maybe I can put it on, you know, let's x2 this, you know what I mean? Get through the story parts, battles and stuff quicker, but not so much that I'm, you know, don't feel like I'm actually taking it in. So I think that's a good idea. But yeah, like I said, I think they're overall are really good. And I think at worst it would just be I should have more self-discipline than to just hammer that button. But I will say, like, the 3 games after playing Trails of Cold Steel, I've absolutely hit that button to be like, oh, let's move this along. And, like, during, like I was playing Resident Evil 8, and I'm like, oh, let me just move a little Oh, I can't do that in this game.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with the speed. Like, where I've noticed it most, or noticed the biggest differences on the old retro games, like you said, the Final Fantasy Collection, like, 7... 8, 9, and 12 on the Switch. Like, it all... I guess I don't remember if it was in 10 or not, but the... having that speed up was definitely worth it, just because when you're on the map and you just want to get moving, or, like you said, if you're in some kind of grinding situation, because there are times in those games where you have to grind, and that's kind of a common staple in a lot of the retro RPGs, is there's always going to be a time where you're just a little bit underleveled and you got to get through, you know, just some mindless grinding, and having that speed up is just wonderful, because it's like, yeah, I don't have to think. I could just hit the button and go. And yeah, having it And I definitely used it in Bravely Default when I played through with that too. Just again, there was a lot of times where I just felt under-leveled, so it was worth it. So again, it's just one of those things where it's like, you know that you're gonna, you have to do these tasks, like they're necessary. So it's like, why not have that option? Like, especially with, like, I can, again, it's a whole technology thing for me. It's like back in the day, obviously, they probably couldn't jam the PlayStation or the PlayStation 2 to make the characters go that fast. But now that you have these old games on the new hardware, I just find that it makes these games like a little bit more palatable. Like there was like how many, you know, some of those old retro games can take a really long time. And if you're shaving like 5 or 6 hours off, then that's going to open up a bigger audience, because now, you know, maybe somebody doesn't want to play a 30-hour Final Fantasy game, but now if you're like, well, you can actually get through it in, like, you know, 18-20 with the speed up, I think that's going to create a lot of incentive for people to be like, oh, you know what, maybe I'll get through a few of these retro games in between, like, waiting for the big games these days, like, you know, the new next-gen games or whatever, you know?
If they ever come. But yeah, no, I think overall, I think they're a great addition. And yeah, I think almost any remaster should at least throw in times two. You know, it just seems right. You know,
at the very
least.
Like, yeah.
Even, and I wonder even if you could almost gate it where, like, oh, during, like, cutscenes and or maybe during important battles, it can't be utilized. But when you're, like, doing more trivial traveling and grinding, like, yeah, you could pop it on. I know that would probably end up just being more work for them, like, to try and, you know, dictate what could and could not be. But I think overall, yeah, I think that's one of the best, like, because when I think, like, the autosave, I guess now it just feels so, like, ubiquitous with most games, right? Like, it almost doesn't feel like a quality of life improvement. It's more like, oh, like, it's just doing normal.
Standard.
Yeah, where it's just, like, yeah. it's meeting compliance spots now. Yeah. Where the speed definitely actually, like, feels like a tangible, hey, this is an improvement. It'll get you through this game quicker in, you know, where certain points it might drag.
Mm. No, I totally agree. Well, especially in, like, we were talking about Final Fantasy, it's, like, if you're going through old retro games where, like, maybe it's like a trilogy or something and you want to get through all three, then having the speed up feature is even that much better then too.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
Yeah, but we should move on to the next quality of life improvement, and this is something that I've noticed in a couple games I've played recently, and this is inventory management. So I guess one of the two most recent games I've finished recently were the Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2, and the inventory management between 1 and 2 could not be more different. it was noticeable. So in Mass Effect 1, the way the system works is that it's a little the weapons that you use in 1, there's no ammo. It's just like there's a cooldown period. Like you can shoot so many times, and then if you shoot too much, it cools down, which is fine. They change it up in 2 where you have to actually find it. Like, it's funny. It's not really even ammo. They say that you have to find pellets that absorb the heat. and so it's
to
like,
cool the gun down kind weird, of thing. Like, yeah, from... That's, yeah. I sort of
and
like
the gun
that
won't
idea.
Work without them. Yeah, so it's, I guess it's just kind of like, I suppose it's a workaround, because it's like bullets in space doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So it's like, okay, it's cooling down, you know, bullets or whatever. But the thing that annoyed me in Mass Effect 1, that thankfully they didn't have at all in Mass Effect 2, was that there was armor, like different armors and different upgrades for all the weapons. So you would just go around and you'd find in like the areas, like you'd pick up new armor, you'd pick up different upgrades for the armor. So I felt like I was constantly going in and being like, okay, you know, what do I want to put on Shepard this time? I got this new armor, and I'd have to see, it's like, oh, well, it's not even armor he can use. So. I'll go see if one of my other party members can use it. And then I was just in those menus for so much time, and it was annoying to me, because even like some of the upgrades are there's so little difference between some of them where it's like, oh, like,
is it even worth the investment?
This isn't worth my time. Yeah, like it's such a small upgrade. It's like a, I don't know, 5% increase to his armor or something. It's like, it's not worth the 20 minutes it's taken me to have to go through each piece of hardware and try to find out, you know, is this armor plus 20 and this is when it's plus 25, and every 15 minutes it feels like I'm going in there to check. It was something that got on my nerves playing Mass Effect 1, and then Mass Effect 2 is just completely gone. Like, there's no armor. You're just wearing what you're wearing. And the health was more tied towards the leveling up, I guess. Like, there was certain benefits that you could choose for each character. So that's really all you had to worry about, which is really nice.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like, sometimes, like, games, right, let's go, oh, you equip a weapon, you equip, like, one piece of armor, and you equip, like, a ring or something, you know? And at first, like, yeah. I feel like whenever I get those games, I'm sort of like, that's sort of it, you know? But then you sort of think about it more deeply, and like you said, you end up spending so much time for, like, pretty minimal gains And if there's only a few pieces of armor or weapons to choose between, you know, it at least breaks the clutter down, right? Like, and you can navigate what's in your bags a little better. Like I said, it's annoying when you're trying to differentiate, like, oh, is this a bigger upgrade? And I think what I hate is when games, like, just show you what it would be with. Like, oh, if you equip this piece of armor, like, instead of 220, you'll be 230. But, like, when I'm hovering over it, it shows it's green and that it's gone up. But then I gotta, like, flick between another item to see how much it's going up, you know? And then it's like, but then that other item has a different value, and it's just like, just tell me, like, plus 10, you know? Like, I wish games would, and I think, I feel like maybe that's more common now, but yeah, like, just tell me how much of an upgrade it is. And I see here you've got down, right, as some of the auto-equip, the best equipment kind of thing. And it's like, it's funny because you'd think that's a great item, right, or a great tool. And I think it is. And most times you could probably, yeah, let me just auto-equip the best and be on with it, you know. But I feel like then it takes away, like, obviously, it takes away the thought, right, and the effort to figure it out, but I almost feel like you have to. Like, I feel like you still should. I don't know. I like to see the upgrades I'm getting, even if at the end of the day it's just like a couple more armor, a couple more strength, you know, or what have you. But I still feel like seeing, like, me equipping it still feels good, I think, more so than, like, the auto-equip and then not really knowing what exactly just happened. Aside from that, I know, you know, I my character is as strong as it can be, but I still feel like that takes a little bit away from that tangible equip. I just think, like you said, I think games just need to be better with just making it easier to access the information so that you can get in and out of there relatively quick and without, yeah, your head spinning.
Yeah, like, for me, I think it depends on the game mostly. If you're in this game that has lots of equipment, like, that's kind of their thing, is that you're always picking up new equipment all the time. I don't mind the auto equips because it's just something, like, I don't have to think about too much if there's too much going on or too many items. But I think personally my favorite type of game would be the one where there's not a ton of items, there's a good portion, but the items themselves, they're not exactly comparable. It's one of those things where it's like, okay, here's three swords, you know, one is strongest for physical, but weakest on magic, and then you've got, like, your mid-range one, and then you got your magical one. And for me,
Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yes, I was just thinking that, because I remember, like, all those, that was the thing with the swords, is that there was, like, one sword that was huge and powerful, but then it didn't have, I think it had, like, the least amount of materia slots, and then you had other ones that were better for magical attacks, and then even with the equipment as well, like, you would have equipment that maybe it was better armor, like, it would protect you more, but it had less materia slots, or you would find the accessories that had bigger, like,
you'd have to think about
it was like a give and take.
Yeah, you had to think about what you were equipping, you know, and like you said, maybe, you know, for a certain battle, you're like, yeah, I need more materia for this, you know, and maybe you switch out. I also really loved how they incentivized you trying different items, right? Because you'd unlock the ability once you hit a certain level, you know, with that weapon. So I love that because it just got you sort of changing up, you know, how you were playing. And especially with Barrett, right? Like when you get that big, like, melee gun. I mean, it's not really a gun, just a big melee weapon. But, like, obviously it's on his hand, so he's up close and personal, where normally throughout most of that game you're playing ranged. But, yeah, no, I think, like, Final Fantasy VII, yeah, like, I think when I first went back and played the VII, the original, when it was released for the Switch and we all played through it, I think I was, like, remember, like, man, like, yeah, I forgot, like, how little equipment there really is. But, like I said, I think it actually works out in the long term, you know, that it actually isn't a hindrance. If anything, it's almost more of a positive.
Move off of inventory management. The other thing that grinds my gears is when you're finding things and you go to some store or merchant or whatever, and it's time to sell, and the game doesn't make it clear what's garbage and what you might want to hold on to. That drives me insane. And Persona is one of those things where it's like, I'm so happy there's just a button that says sell your junk.
Yeah.
To think, like, the worst thing is, I guess it's a lot of it is in, like, crafting games where it's like,
there's just so much crap, you know, in your items and your menus and stuff.
Yeah. Like, do I need this to craft or can I just sell it for junk? And me having to figure it out drives me nuts because, like, I don't want to have to go to a wiki page or, you know, a game fac and be like, okay, should I keep this item or can I sell it? Like, I just tell me if I can sell it. Like, just, you know,
yeah, I think label it. Like MMOs do a really great job of this. And I mean, if you're playing on PC, I know at least for like Warcraft, you can actually get like an add-on that just it auto sells the junk for you. Which I see you've got mentioned in here for Persona 4, Golden, which, like you said, just helps declutter, right? But I know in MMOs they always have it sort of like where the item has sort of like a border around it. So it'd be like, oh, this is a green item, so it's like, it's better, it's not junk. I mean, it might not be great, right? But it's not junk. So it's like, there's like, the junk is just sort of like a faded white or gray text, you know? So you could just easily scroll through your bag and just see like, oh, that's junk. And then you can sort of see the different tiers of the quality of items. I think that would like not really be that hard just to do, like, implement.
An indicator.
Yeah, just, even if it's just,
like, any kind of indicator.
Yeah, merely a text, you know, like, oh, the text color is slightly different. That indicates it's garbage, you know? Or just to be sold for money.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the game. There was a game I just played recently, and the way that you knew if you could sell it or not was you'd have to read the text explanation of it, where, like, you put your you highlight or whatever, and then it's like, you know, oh, this is a metal clog or whatever. It can be sold at any store. And I'm like, this is, like, I'm glad you're telling me, but this is still kind of annoying that I have to go in and read whether this is worth selling or
not. More obvious.
Yeah, like, I shouldn't have to do work to figure out if I should sell it or not. I think all RPGs moving forward should have some kind of easy indication that I can kind of just fly through the inventory system when I get to a store and just sell what I don't need.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. Like you said, less time in menus is better. And not that I dislike being in the menus, you know, but like when it's meaningless or like just trivial, you know, it's like, stop wasting my time.
That's right. Time is important. And there's nothing more important with timing as the difficulty of a game. And I know this is one of those issues that there's always like a Twitter war every so often about the developer's intention or the, you know, the get good attitude of difficulty settings and that sort of thing, and whether there should be any at all or whatnot. And I've personally kind of bounced back and forth over the years of, you know, whether there should be settings or not. And I think recently I'm really moving towards the more, yes, like, include settings. Because for me, there's, again, you know, we play a lot of RPGs, so this might be one of those issues that's more near and dear to our hearts. But I'm trying to get through as many games as I can, and there's nothing more frustrating than a very annoying difficulty spike.
We both just ran into that in Shin Megami Tensei 3, and really only a couple hours in. And like I said, I was reading, apparently that's one of the more difficult bosses in regards to how powerful you are while facing them. Like, obviously more difficult bosses later, but we'll be more beefed up by that point. But yeah, I think, you know, I was originally like a Fire Emblem. You play, your guy dies, you start back up, and that's just how it ought to be, you know? Like, this is a game, you know? There's no babies here. Introduced, like, the no dying, I think it had to be around the time that my mindset was already switching, because it was just like, yeah, I don't care enough to play this game and, like, oh, I've beaten this map, but my one guy got, like, oh, they crit on him and he died. And now I'm 45 minutes down the drain in what otherwise was a perfect run, you know? Like, I got smoked, you know? And then it's like, yeah, do I really want to waste an hour of my time redoing that, you know? It's like, not really. I don't. So it's like, yeah, I'm in whatever. This is not a competitive game, right? Like, these aren't competitive games we're playing. They're single-player JRPGs. Of course, like, I think having difficulty is great, and some people really love the challenge, right? They want to, like, go into random encounters and think, like, or have the opportunity, like, this could kill me. I want to be playing for serious, you know? And then, you know what? Some people don't. Yeah. Like, who cares? I don't care anymore. And it's funny, because I remember when I was debating, like, do I want to pony up these few hours here and get my team proper to beat this boss? And it might take a little bit of time, you know? Or do I just want to flip on easy mode? And it's actually funny, because when I looked at the modes, I just had a curiosity. There was no easy mode for SMT3. So I was like, oh, okay. Like, I thought I read people saying there was, but whatever.
Like, normal and hard. That's
you have to download the easy mode. You have to go on to, which I think is actually amazing, because it's like, not only, like, they're like shaming you, like, yep, come back with your tail tucked between your legs. Yep, you can download easy mode, you baby. Which I thought was just like really funny. I hope that's why they did it, because that is really funny. No, I think, like, again, now if this was some sort of, you know, a game where we're competing against other people and you get an advantage by going to easy mode and then changing it to hard later or something stupid, like, sure. Like, I could totally understand the outrage on why you wouldn't want that included. But honestly, who cares, you know? Like, if you find playing on the super hard difficult is what you like to do, like, who cares if somebody just wants to, like, puddle their way through and just see the story?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, if I'm a developer, I just want people to play the game and I want them to finish it. There was a recent interview with, I can't remember who the developer was, but the gist of it was they were asking the developer about things that they could do to make their game more replayable, and the developer's response was, like, replayable? It's like, only like 25% of the people that play our game finish it. We just want people to finish the game. Like, we don't care if they play it multiple times. We want them to finish it. And to me, it's like, there's been games where there's been difficulty spikes, and I just, like, I'm like, screw this. I'm not wasting time. Like, one of the recent examples for me, I didn't give up on it, but I was extremely close to giving up on it, was Alliance Alive. I played it on the 3DS originally.
Yep,
and there's this, there's this one gauntlet that you get to in the snow world, and you go into the castle and you're trying to like work your way down the castle, and it's just like a gauntlet of enemies one after another, and I was just dying and dying and dying.
I remember this.
There's no way to get out of the castle. There's no way. Like, I don't even think, I don't know what the save situation was, but I think whatever it was is like, I would have to go back like hours back to like before a certain point just to like, there was no grinding opportunities. So it's not even like just get good, go grind for an hour and then beat the boss. It's like, no, like I can't leave. I'm stuck. It's like either I get through this, or I go back like hours ago to grind before I even get to that point, or I just quit. And I was really on the fence of like, I might just give up because this is insane. I'm not going through this. And luckily the way the game's battle system works is like, there's a lot of randomness to it. So I managed to find a strategy, lucked my way out of that one. Finally got out of the gauntlet, and I'm like, oh, thank God I can finish the game. But I tell you, there's been a lot of times where I'm just like, is it worth it? Like, is this really worth my time? Like, it's.
I remember you playing that, and because we were playing together, and then I was right up to that point, and then I went, nope. I was like, this game is not nearly as enjoyable as what David has just gone through to put myself through that. And no, thank you.
Yeah. Well, and one of the great things about the Legend of the Hero series is when you get to a boss, or I think any fight, really.
Yep, the weekend, right?
If you die... Sorry?
The weekend, yep.
Oh, yeah, there's the weekend, yeah. So, in particular, the game I'm playing now, Trails from Zero, I ended up in I was doing, like, this one mission, and there's this... You get to a certain point, and you end up having to go one-on-one with a gang leader, like, the three... I have a party of four, but Lloyd decided he was going to fight this guy on his own. And I'm like, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? I don't think we're strong enough to do this. And like, nope, I got walloped in the first fight. So I'm like, oh man, I don't really want to go back and have to grind. So I just do the weekend, and I got walloped again in the second one.
Weaken him again.
And then I weaken him again, and I won in the third one. And I'm like, you know what? Who cares? Like, I'm not going for trophies in this game. There's no trophies to get. So, you know, who cares? Like, I got through it. Like, well, and at the end of the day, what does it matter?
Yeah,
like, the whole point is for me to continue on.
Yeah,
you know?
I've definitely used that that weekend. And it's funny because the first time you're just like, man, like, this guy is so much stronger than me. and then like you said, then you die again, then you weaken again, you go, oh man, this guy's a freaking pathetic loser. You know, like, but this is easy mode. But again, you know, if there's no real like advantage, and the idea is to get through the game and just enjoy it, you know, like, I don't think having you know, somebody have an easier time shouldn't really take away from your enjoyment, right? Like at the end of the day,
yeah,
it's, you both played the game. Like, sure, maybe it was harder for you, but like, you still both got to play it, you know?
Yeah. Well, we were recently in our Discord discussing Tales of Vesperia. Like, I would argue that that game is most enjoyed on the easiest difficulty setting, because really the most enjoyment in this game is the story, like following along with Yuri and the whole party, and Estelle and Rapide. You know, it's the characters, mm-hmm. It's the interactions between the characters, it's learning how the story goes, it's getting through all the chapters and everything. And the weakest point of that game is the combat. And it's an older game, so
it's an
older action RPG, and so it's like, you know what, it's, you know, the combat is kind of boring, let's just get through it. So I had actually played it when it first came out on Switch. I usually do normal difficulty, so that's what I did back then, and I just remember the combat being incredibly irritating, and ended up giving up on that one a few hours in, and then I started it recently and switched it down to easy, and
boom,
the enjoyment level skyrocketed, because it's like, you know, I'm not wasting all this time in the dang action RPG anymore. It's just like, let me enjoy the story.
Yep. Yeah, it's funny because even in like the MMO world, right? Like, with WoW specifically, back in the day, like the original end raid of the, like, the very first iteration of WoW was, it's called Naxxramas, right? And, like, they showed, like, the number of people who actually went in there was such a small number of the player base, and then an even smaller number, right, who had beaten it. And then in the second, or the first expansion, it very similar, right? They had this thing, this place called Sunwell, and it was like, I think like 1% of like the player base, like so small, right? So I think from that point they started to realize like we're putting all this time and effort into these big, grand, awesome raids with really cool bosses, really like an epic moment, right, within the game, and such a small like player base, portion of the player base got to play it. So they've re-released like that original one, like they re-released it in an easier mode and more people got to see it, and then now they have like all sorts of difficulty, right? So like there would be the one raid and you could do it on you know, Mythic being like where the top dogs play, right? The people go for the world first. Then there's like a Heroic, which is tough but like doable, normal, and like, and then like a looking for raid option, which is like a joke because it's just random people put together. So the boss, it's like super dumbed down. But the idea, right, is like everyone can see these boss fights now, even if, and then again, like each tier of difficulty is slightly different. So, yeah, again, I think at the end of the day, the more people can see is the better, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, like, to me, giving the choice is the best option. Like, just give choice. Let the players that want the difficulty enjoy the hard mode, and the players that just want to enjoy the story, let them play on easy. That's kind of where I am. Choices.
Yep. Yeah, more options.
The last call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol. Get going.
But that'll take us into last call for this week. And we're going to continue the same theme, and we're going to talk about what retro game could be elevated in its standing with the addition of some quality of life improvements. And I think this is pretty topical because the Switch seems to be getting a whole lot of remasters and re-releases and that sort of thing. And there's a lot of old RPGs that I think a lot of people could enjoy, but some of them are maybe just a little bit too difficult or too long, or there's something
there's
about
a roadblock
them that just makes them, yeah, there's a roadblock for some people. Like maybe the people who aren't like the hardcore RPG players want to play some of these older games that are just kind of meant for the hardcore. And I think it's nice to give these people these options to let them play games that maybe they wouldn't be able to approach otherwise. And one of the things that jumps out for me is this is actually a game that did come to Switch. But I don't know, I felt like it could have used some other improvements, and this is Star Ocean First Departure, R, very long title. To me, I know it did come with some quality of life improvements to make it a bit better, but this kind of falls into the whole Tales of Vesperia issue in the sense that it's an old action RPG, like the battles are very old feeling. It's this kind of weird running around and just kind of slapping around the enemies as best you can without getting hurt. If they had some way of speeding that up, dropping the difficulty, just, you know, let us get through it. I know we didn't talk about it in this episode, but one quality of life improvement that I really enjoy that I wish they'd apply to some of the old RPGs is the random encounter turn-on. Because that was another one of the problems with Star Ocean for me, was that it was one of those, like, take three steps and you got another random encounter, and take three steps, random encounter. A lot of these older RPGs, like, I get that, you know, the random encounters are there for a reason. Like, you need to do your grind and you need to level up. But to if they drop the difficulty and let me kind of turn off, like, either go halfsies on the randoms or just full-on turn off the randoms so that I can just enjoy some of these older RPGs and, you know, relive the story and that sort of thing. I wish they would do that for something like Star Ocean.
Yeah. Yeah, I could definitely see how that would be good. And then, like, even with, like, I guess on my mind, right, SMT3 as far as what, like, is interesting about it is that it like did half steps toward, like, it gave you like a bit of quality of life, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't yeah. give you the full on, right? Especially with the saves, like, it would have been nice to just be able to save anywhere. I think, you know, as I was saying before with the suspend point, like, it's definitely great. Like, it is definitely something that is good to have in there, especially because there are times you go long periods without a save terminal. And again, little things there. But, yeah, I think a speed boost would work in this one as well. And how you were mentioning even, like, being able to maybe turn down the encounters. I think what's cool is, like, for me, with those games that let you flip off the encounters, it's like I'll go through a full area the first time if it's a game where there are enemies on the field and it's not random. I'll hit every enemy I pass, you know, with randoms. I have no problem going my way through. But then when I get to the boss, right, all right, I got to go back to town and resupply up or whatever the situation is. Then it's like, I don't want to have a million battles on the way back, you know? It's like, let me turn it off, mm-hmm. get to the boss, continue, you know? And then if I need to grind it out, sure, like, I could just flip it on and maybe they give you a time. Like, what I would do is if they gave you the option to get rid of them, I'd give the option to double it as well, you know? So therefore, you could just pick and choose when you want to, like, invest time in grinding and when you want to sort of more push the story along. And again, I think with a lot of these older games, just more options around the board makes it more accessible, gets, you know, breathes more life into the fandom. And then, you know, maybe that equates to newer and better games or just as good games coming out in the future. So I just, you said it before, right? I just sort of echo it. Like, the more options, the better. I don't think giving more options really is ever a bad thing.
No, and I'm even thinking of, I know we always keep talking about how Final Fantasy 1 through 6 still has no, like, there's no modern way to play that game. Like, it's all on very old, I think the PSP is, like, the most modern way. I mean, I'm completely ignoring the iOS version, because mobile, and they're awful, but...
Those aren't for real.
No, like, they might come to Switch one day. I'm hoping that we'll get, you know, a 1 through 6 collection or something like that. And I remember so many instances in the original Final Fantasy where it's like, you know, you're going through the dungeons and the random encounters are kind of beating you down, and you get to the boss and you're like, you finally beat the boss, and maybe it's like kind of, you just kind of get through on the skin of your teeth or something, and there's not a whole lot left. Maybe you're only down to one party member or something, and you've defeated like the Lich King or whatever, and you're, you know, and you have to get out of the Earth Temple, and I'm sitting there going, okay,
God help me.
So I got one person left. I gotta walk out this whole dungeon again and not die. And there's been cases where it's like, you know what, even though I beat the boss, like, I have to go back because I'm screwed, because there's no way, like, I'm not getting out of this temple again. So yeah, there's going to be old RPGs like that where it's like, you know what, it would have been really nice if I could have turned off the random battles, because
just trying to get home.
I just want to get to the end, that's it. I just want to revive a couple people. And I mean, the counterpoint, I guess, is inventory management. And then, you know, for me, that's when I would usually buy like 99 health potions and use them all up after a boss fight to get out of there alive. But it's just, you know, when these games are going to be reintroduced one day, I'm sure they're going to be ported to the Switch at some point, or Steam or something. Like, they got to show up eventually. But having those same, like, we've seen them in 7, 8, and 9. I'm sure we're going to see them on the early ones when they come. I just think these are great ways for a new generation to be compelled to play these games, because without it, I think a lot of people are just going to say, you know what, this feels too old, I'm not going to play.
I'll wait for the remake.
Yeah, that's right.
One day we'll get... Do you think, real quick aside, do you think we hear about Final Fantasy Part 2? Or Final Fantasy VII, excuse me, Part 2, in these upcoming weeks with whatchamacallit, E3 around the corner?
I don't know how much we're going to hear about it. I think there might be like a teaser.
I would be okay with that.
I would bank on maybe a a 30 or 60 second teaser, I think. I don't think there's going to be like a full-blown trailer, but I think there'll be a teaser for it.
Mm. I hope so. I'm ready, man. I'm ready.
Yeah. Man, Square has got so many games coming out that it's like, I don't, you wonder what's going to show up at E3 because they've got a ton of stuff coming.
Yeah, it's, I can't wait, dude. It's going to be a good week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And then we just learned about Nintendo's got 40 minutes of exclusive software. I thought that was funny that they specifically made mention it's exclusively on software. So we're going to see some games there too.
Yep. Can't come soon enough. And I've got the day off now, so I'll be able to watch it in its entirety.
Yeah, there you go. Well, for us coming up on the Mage, I know we've got a few episodes coming your way. We got next week will be Persona 4 Golden. That'll be the non-spoiler episode showing up in the Mage, and we're going to have a spoiler cast showing up in the Patreon and Apple subscription only podcast Albed Time. So we'll have two episodes of Persona 4 available. Then we got a Father's Day special coming up after that, and then we've got the big Zelda 2 crossover with the Talk Nintendo guys.
Woo-wee! Yeah, 250 coming up on us quick, which is crazy. But yeah, I gotta fire back into it. I was actually thinking, I know we're going a little longer here, but I was going to say, we were talking about the Dragon Quest III remake, right, with the HD 2D.
Oh, yeah, 2D HD.
You know what would be great is if Nintendo, I mean, like, just pretty much just stole that graphical art style and remade Zelda 2 in that art style. That would be interesting.
Yeah, that would be. That's you. Well, this is the year of Zelda, so you never know. But
yeah, we will.
It'd be
see.
Interesting to see some of these older games get a new life. Well, even imagine the first Zelda getting a remake, maybe in the vein of Link's Awakening.
Mm. That'd be pretty dope too. The cutesy wootsy.
Cootsie wootsie. We'll have to see. As long as there's not 8 storylines, we'll be all right.
Yeah, nothing could be that bad, right?
Yeah. I have to give Jordan a little jab for not being here. Well, I want to thank everyone for listening to this week's podcast. Again, for those listening, on the free podcast feed, it's always about a week behind, so if you're wanting to stay right up to date with The Thirsty Mage, then you can head on over to our patreon.com/thethirstymage. And you can also, I don't know, Apple ended up pushing back their podcast subscription launch date into June. So I don't know if it's actually available as of now. But if it is, you also can get the episodes there. And like I said, we also have the second podcast show started up, Odd Bedtime. So that's the same folks that you have here at The Thirsty Mage, but we're talking about pretty much anything. It could be RPGs, could be any, you know, any other topic that's in video games. We're up for anything in that one. So that's only available either through the Patreon or through the Apple Podcast subscription. So if you want more information, you can head on over there, or you can even join us on our Discord, which you'll be able to find in the show notes. But until then, I want to thank Casey for joining me for this week's Quality of Life episode, and we'll catch him next week with the Persona 4.
Yes, yep. Yeah, it's been a couple weeks, I feel like, since I've been on the main feed. So good to be back, even though everyone else, I guess they heard I was coming, so they decided not to. But no, always a good time.
Yeah. All right. Have a good night.
All right. See you guys.